This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Hello, I am Randy Andrews, and today Tim Benson and I will talk about the movie Whiteout, as well as the comic by Greg Rucka. We'll discuss the differences in story, art direction, and music effectively involved in the film and the after effects of the graphic novel, today on Soundtrack Alley. Tim, it's nice to have you on the show again.
Of course.
What do you say we get into this interesting film?
Yeah. Randy suggested we review Whiteout. Ghost in the Shell. Has Ghost in the Shell come out already? I'm lost in the timeline.
Yes. Yes, it has.
Whiteout, obviously based on the Greg Rucka comic. Greg Rucka and Steve Lieber.
Yeah.
Published by Oni Press. So I definitely wanted to read the books. They're pretty short reads, so that was easy.
Yeah, they are surprisingly short, but they're actually really, really good.
Oh, yeah. They're fantastic. So the movie based on that, it's pretty consistent. The events themselves don't necessarily follow, but the gist of it, you can do anything you want in a comic. In a movie, you have to give a bit. There's a realistic aspect to a movie, but I thought they held pretty close to the from the movie to the comics, or the other way around.
Yeah,
it was okay.
Yeah, and, I found the movie to be, pretty close to the first volume of the book,
Yeah. Yeah, the actual events themselves, pretty close to the first book, especially, the tie-out line and stuff. The actual plot of the book was pretty close. I really liked the second book, though.
Yes.
I liked the second book quite a bit more than the first, and I thought the movie kind of took on some of the tone of that second book.
Mm-hmm.
But the events themselves, definitely first book.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. One thing I noticed with the books, I found it really compelling, actually, to see that it was done in black and white.
Yeah.
Even though the movie's called Whiteout, sometimes they had it under the code name Snowbound, which didn't make a ton of sense because there isn't a super amount of snowstorms in Antarctica. So
there are a couple big ones in this, though. There's one.
Yeah.
One big snowstorm coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the catalyst for the whole thing, like timeline and everything. But I'm going to go to a show in a couple weeks, and Greg Rucka is one of the attendees. I'm going to go ask him where that third book is.
Oh, there's a third book?
No, that's why I'm going to ask him where it is. They had announced a third book, and it just never saw publication, as far as I know. Changed names a couple times, and so...
Interesting.
We'll see what he says. He probably won't say anything, but...
Well, if he does, see if you can get your hands on it.
Oh, I know. Well, he's probably going to write it first,
Well, maybe he's already wrote it.
Yeah.
That would,
we'll see.
That would be good.
But, yeah, Oni Press did the first... the Whiteout books, and they do a lot of black and white publications, or at least they started with a lot of black and white.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had no idea it was going to be black and white, but once I saw it, it was not a big deal. Especially with, you're talking ice, you know?
Yeah.
So they could have spent a ton of money coloring the book, and most of it would have been white.
Yeah, so, exactly. They actually saved themselves some money by putting it in black and white, and made it more effective, actually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, credit to Steve Lieber, though. I mean, how hard it is to almost draw reverse. You know, like, instead of drawing something like debris flying around, you had to not draw characters where the debris is, the debris being snow in this case. So, definitely a challenge to pull something like that off. So,
yeah, and I found that with Meltdown, I think that's the second book, right?
Melt.
It's just called Melt.
I think it's just Melt.
But I found that book to be really compelling next to the first book that, you know, it's kind of a murder mystery, kind of a heist type situation. And
I think the first one, the catalyst, or the, you know, I said this earlier, the catalyst is the coming storm. Everything's got to be done right away. It's got to be done in 3 days. And I think that actually kind of detracted from it. Whereas the second book, they had to solve, you know, another mystery, or they were going to die.
Exactly. You know?
And so it was a more compelling reason to move the story forward. But, I mean, I they both have their place. And, I mean, it makes sense why the movie chose the first book, because that's, I mean, that's kind of a movie technique.
Yeah.
Coming storm.
Yep. It's kind of a, you know, it's a good plot device to make things move along.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, the movie wasn't bad, and Kate Beckinsale, she did an effective job with playing Carrie Stetko of the novel or of the book. And I mean, I did notice definitely there's big differences between the book and the movie. One of those major differences was her so-called international partner. In the book, it's a woman.
Yeah.
And she has a relationship with the woman in the book. In the movie, it's a guy.
Oh, of course.
So, So, I mean, you know, they changed things like that. They even changed the, spoiler alert, the fingers that get cut off in the book between the movie. In the movie, it's the last two fingers, and in the book, it's the first two fingers.
Yeah.
So, and it actually makes it more effective in the book to have those first two fingers cut off, because it makes it more difficult to move, to do things with those last two fingers.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. For the movie, it's cost. Like, which two fingers can we remove using makeup and stuff and still have you, like, function?
Yeah.
Versus the, you know, if we take the two from the book, you're kind of ruined for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
So I can do a lot with the first three, you know, thumb and first two fingers, but I can't do much with the last two fingers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So
I don't know. The movie was okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't my favorite. Maybe I should have watched the movie and then read the books.
I don't know. I mean,
but I just found the movie kind of, well, I mean, essentially, it wasn't that it was predictable, because obviously I read the book, so
I know what's
going to happen. But it was predictable in the way that all kind of action flicks are. Like, you know, the main character, Kate Beckinsale's character, Carrie, is not going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know she's going to solve the murder. Yeah, like there's just these things you know are going to happen, and it's just not a, It's a popcorn flick.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. Like, I should have seen it in the theaters in the summer, or I guess, yeah, probably in the summer when it came out. And it would have been a fun action movie. And it was September, so.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
But sitting at home, watching it, it was okay.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. One of the things I noticed about the film, though, is that when it was the action scenes, like when you first see like one of the villains be all bundled up in black and have that ice pick hatchet.
Yeah, yeah.
That was actually really frenetic action. You know, it's like she has a real sense of urgency to get away from him. And it was almost like bordering on a horror film because you don't know who that is. Yeah. And
That was probably a highlight for me of the movie. One of the maybe three highlights is that first chase scene where he's coming at her with the ice axe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, that's a big, really compelling scene because it's like, whoa! You're trying to figure out what's going on, and the fact that it's moving so fast, you're like, okay, what just happened?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a big difference between the books where, you know, you see a reveal with the book, but it's more steady paced.
Yeah. Oh, in the book, you start to realize who it is. And you start to realize why they did it. They start to reveal that kind of stuff. But you don't feel the cover-up.
Yeah.
That you do in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know who did it in the movie. Or at least you know the person who matters. You know the doctor is involved way too early in the movie. And then it's just trying to cover it up. And I didn't like that feel. Cover-up feel. I thought the comic was a better pace where you were discovering things with her.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew more than she did. The movie was, you know everything except for this one thing. You know, you don't know the one guy in the mask. But you know everything else. And everyone's trying to cover it up. And, you know, and you're just waiting for that. Oh, is she going to catch him this time? You know, and that wasn't as good, but
yeah, and you know, the movie version of Whiteout, it actually sat in production for a while. I mean, they were trying to acquire the rights to actually show the film with screenplay by John and Eric Hober, and there were so many differences of turning around for the lack of production, rights being acquired, even having. They had first wanted to cast Reese Witherspoon as the lead role. Ultimately, the rights over the film changed ownership, and then it detached Reese Witherspoon from the project, and it changed it to Dark Castle Entertainment. And so Dominic Cena, who was a fan of the graphic novel, had sought to acquire the rights to film the film.
Yeah.
And so they had petitioned Joel Silver and to direct it. So then it changed hands again to Warner Brothers. I thought it was interesting. Production began on March 5th, 2007. The film was primarily set in a bright world of ice and sunlight and an unconventional approach to the murder mystery genre. And so both real and fake snow were used in the production. So the author, which was Greg Rucka, applauded the film adaption of his source material, but upon seeing the finished film, he felt differently, saying that comic Carrie and one-act play Carrie would shake movie Carrie down because the bleachers, and they would laugh her out of the You Share Our Name club and send her limping and mewling home to mother, and they wouldn't feel a moment's regret about doing it either. Which is really funny because you know, Greg Rucka, he wrote the book. And yeah. It's like, you butchered my character.
I wonder how many people, though, like, you write a character and then somebody else makes it into a movie. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if nobody liked seeing their character on film, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't say much because you got paid really well.
Yeah.
Greg Rucka's not a guy to hold his tongue, so.
That's true. And, I mean, he's done plenty of other good works, like Velvet.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's a fantastic writer. I mean, there's no question there.
Yeah, and, I mean, he's done so many other things other than Whiteout. So yeah. there's not any bad discussion about whether he had a good point as to make for whether the comic carry versus the movie carry. So... you know, Kate Beckinsale, she did a admirable job for playing the character and made it worth watching. Now, what did you think about the score with John Frizzell?
Yeah, there were a couple of cues that I thought were really good, and then I thought there were a couple cues that you could have plucked them from any suspense film ever made. You know, and substituted without noticing.
True.
The final, like, airplane, you know, like, fight around the airplane at the very end.
Yeah.
I thought that one, I liked that one. It had a lot of energy, and I think it was cued and edited well to fit within the film. Some of the others I thought maybe weren't cut as well, so they kind of came in late or came in early or just were kind of bland throughout the whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
That scene with you said the frenetic energy, the guy coming out with the ice pick, the music during that portion was really good. That frenetic energy, I think a lot of it was the music and the film. It cuts a lot. I mean, it cuts camera shots over and over and over during that whole scene, and the music cuts pretty perfectly with it.
Yeah.
Those are the two that really stand out. And then I guess a third would be they're flying and they're talking about the ice. Nothing like amazing about it. I just thought there was a piece of music that I really liked. But.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I found it really interesting that with John Frizzell, he really took a chance on scoring this film. He used orchestration that never had been attempted before, using an electronic cello for the isolated feeling of being in the Antarctic, along with the cold and frozen environment that we find ourselves in this choice of film. And then surprisingly, as we've been talking about, there's a fair share of action music. And some of the cues are just overall exciting. And then John Frizzell, he knows how to dial it down when it's needed. And so unlike much of the Hollywood productions, it isn't overly busy. And there isn't like a corruption of too many instruments all in one action cue. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he kept it simple for those.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of... I mean, I probably brought this up multiple times, but it seems like a lot of big action films, or even films that have elements of action in them, it seems the action cues are so filled with so many instruments that you're trying to lock down, say, a certain instrument and say, well, I like this instrument of how it's used, but you don't notice it when it's so many instruments. And I think John Frizzell did a good job with using simple cues, or not necessarily cues, but instruments to give you the feeling of that cold environment.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's the... Everybody involved in the movie had to think about the ice a lot, and I think he did well keeping it simple. certain couple key instruments can really do well for that setting.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got a few cues I'd like to play for us today. I've got the first being Bass Camp, Carrie's Theme, and How Not to Die. Now, what do you think of these cues, Tim?
They kind of set the tone for, you know, isolation on the ice, and they're kind of background noise for the not noise background, you know, for the recollection of Carrie and why she's there. So mm-hmm. They're kind of mood setting pieces.
Yeah, and they're not bad. It doesn't give us the initial action for the film, which is all right, because you want to set it up. Now let's play those three cues. Next, I'd like us to hear some of the frenetic action for the action cues for the film. The initial action of the, you know, the masked person in all black and
the ice pick killer.
With the ice pick killer, yeah. You know, against Carrie, the discovery of something hidden, and then even the next death that occurs. I feel that John Frizzell uses these cues immensely well, and it's orchestrated in like a deep mystery for the film. So the cues I want to play is Vostak Attack, Camp Delta, Discovery, and Carrie's Suspicion. So what do you think of how these cues fit into the story?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is, like I said, that high energy, that first piece of action, high energy music we get. And then is Camp Delta the arrival music of her when she's arriving at the second camp?
Yeah.
So that's one that stuck out for me. Just her journey, you know, and you start to feel for her and start to understand how easy it would be for her to back out. And that music, I think, does really well for that.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely agree. So now, let's play those cues.
We'll be right back.
Next and finally, we come to the conclusion of another episode. The last cues that I have brings us to the climax of the film, knowing how deep the plot goes and how exactly or what exactly happened through the presentation of the clues and even the resolution. What do you think of the end of the film compared to the comic?
Obviously, it's a movie. It's got to go big. You know, a comic can really pay off with words. You know, you can show some really high emotional moments. You know, you start to deal with the doctor and all that stuff. So it's probably not fair to judge the two against each other. But I mean, the movie has to have that big action payoff, the fight scene that the book didn't have to do. I mean, there's definitely the violence or the action in the book, but it's the climax of it isn't the same. But I liked the fight at the end of the movie, the airplane scene, or I call it the airplane scene just because it's all around it. But it's kind of an over the top take on it. But
oh yeah. Yeah, I would definitely agree. But, you know, it just gives us a big frenetic action that actually leads to the ending of what happens. And the ending cues that I'd like to play is the whiteout, the clues, I'd like to see it, resolution, and whiteout main on ends. And resolution and whiteout main on ends is all one cue, so... We see the resolution, we see the results of what happens. Any lasting thoughts on those cues?
No, I think they're good pieces and they fit well with those end moments. So
yeah, so the next time we get together, we'll be, you know, we've got a few movies that are coming up that we're gonna be talking about in full detail. We're going to be discussing Guardians of the Galaxy, the original, as of the release of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, coming out fairly soon in May. So
yeah,
we're looking forward to that. And then we've got our introduction for several different things. So we've got lots of films that are coming up. And we can really look forward to those. So we'll be, you know, we can talk about that and get those dates scheduled down. But I want to thank you again for being on the show. It's always enjoyable to have you on the show. And you can find my show on iTunes, soundtrackalley.podbean.com. You can email me at soundtrackalley@yahoo.com. I set that up specifically for people who want to comment. And then if you have any further thoughts on the film or have a comment or a question, please let me know. And so now we can play these last cues. So enjoy and happy listening. We'll be right back.
thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take some time to review my podcast on iTunes and also listen to it on Podbean. And if you leave a review or rating on there, it'll help us get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.